But we'll go and look at each account, and we'll talk about what's added to it, what we can actually get from that, the lessons or the characteristics we can learn about Jesus and things of that nature. If y'all will, go ahead and turn to Matthew 14. I would like this class to be a little bit of a discussion class, but before we jump into the lesson, a lot of y'all are familiar with feeding the 5,000. What are some things that you remember about this miracle before we dive into it? Anyone? Can y'all hear me? Okay. What are some things that you remember about the feeding of the 5,000 before we dive into actually reading it? What are some things that you remember about this? 5,000 men. All right, 5,000 men. I'm glad you said that because, of course, we don't know about the exact number of women and children. What are some other things you can think about when we come to this passage?
The miracle of the multiplication of the food.
All right, multiplication of the bread and the loaves and the fish. Thank you. Anything else? Anyone?
There was leftovers.
Oh, I love that. There were leftovers. Abundance. You know, we don't like leftovers, do we? But there's some lessons we can learn about them having so much over abundantly. And then one part even talks about they were able to eat as much as they wanted. Just think about that. You ever been somewhere you had to wait for everybody to get their meal to see if you can have seconds because you're still hungry? That wasn't there. What are some other things you can maybe think about? Well, we'll go ahead and dive into it. One of the biggest things I think about, which we get into Matthew in just a little bit, is one thing we learn about is Jesus' compassion throughout this whole thing. The compassion he has for the multitudes, and not only compassion he has for the multitudes, but also the time he's going to take to teach a lesson to his disciples that are with him. But if you'll turn over to Matthew chapter 14, we're going to read through verses 13 through 21, and then we'll take it a verse at a time, and we'll go through all the other accounts. So you might want to put a marker there or something. We're going to be flipping through all these, so keep that in mind. In verse 13, when Jesus heard it, he departed from there by boat to a deserted place by himself. But when the multitudes heard it, they followed him on foot from the cities. And when Jesus went out, he saw a great multitude, and he was moved with, here's that one thing I want to concentrate a little bit on today, compassion for them. And he healed their sick. When it was evening, his disciples came to him, saying, "This is a deserted place, and the hour is already late. Send the multitude away, that they may go into the villages and buy themselves food." But Jesus said to them, They do not need to go away. You give them something to eat." And they said to him, "We have here only 5 loaves and 2 fish. We said, "Bring them here to me." Then he commanded the multitudes to sit down on the grass, and he took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, looking up to heaven. He blessed and broke and gave the loaves to the disciples, and the disciples gave to the multitudes. So they all ate and were filled, and they looked up to the 12. They took up 12 baskets, full of fragments that remained. Now those who had eaten were about 5,000, keyword, men, besides women and children. Like I said, I'm going to go a verse at a time. So if we go back to verse 13, it says, when Jesus heard it. Obviously, what did Jesus hear? What did he hear about? Of course, if you look at the passages up right above it, right here in Matthew, it talks about the beheading of John the Baptist and actually how the disciples had to carry the body away. So we know that Jesus has heard about this. But not only that, if you go to Mark chapter 6, verse 30, and sometimes we don't look through these all at the same time, we might not get it all together. Do you think that's the only thing that the disciples actually told Jesus about? Let's look at Mark chapter 6, verse 30. Then the apostles gathered to Jesus, and they told him all things, both what they did. What did they do? Both what they had what? What they have done and taught. So not only we hear about, they tell him about John the Baptist, but also they tell Jesus about, hey, what we've been teaching and what we have done, which obviously would have been counting some of the miracles and things of that nature. So we see a little bit more there. Now let's go back to Matthew's account. We're going to continue to look at verse 13. And it says, when Jesus heard it, he departed from there to a boat, and like this, to a deserted place by himself. And we look at the other passages, we know it's not just by himself. He's actually going to take his disciples with him. But let's go and look real quick at Mark chapter 6, verse 31. Hopefully you're still there. In verse 31, it says, "And he said to them, come aside by yourselves to a deserted place and do what? Rest a while. For there were many coming and going, and they did not even have time to eat." So Jesus tells them to go to a deserted place for one reason at first. What was the main reason? So they can do what? Do you ever need to rest? Now, when you look at the word rest here, and I know I'm not saying this correctly, but I do the best I can, is anapeo, and it means to cause or to permit one to cease from doing, to cease from movement, to cease from labors, or actually even to go to a quiet place. Is there times where you need to be at a quiet place? You know, sometimes in this world we get so busy with so many things that are around us, we forget to sit and to think and meditate upon God and things of that nature. But not only here in Mark chapter 6, verse 32, what we just looked at, they needed to rest. And why does it say they needed to rest for a while? What were two reasons below that? What was actually happening at this time? They did not have time to eat. And many were coming and going. Now you think about that in your life. Do you ever have time to sit and rest? Or do you spend too much, I hate to say spend too much time with other people, but are too many people actually coming to you and bombarding you with things that you need to have done? What I want you to see here is Jesus said it was okay. And he told his disciples, we need to take a rest. Let's sit for a little while. Let's be refreshed. Let's meditate on some other things. A lot of times, sometimes we think in this world that, hey, rest is not good. You always hear idle hands is the devil's work. Well, let's not say that necessarily, but sometimes we do need that rest to be refreshed, and that's what we see here. Jesus said that was okay. He wanted the disciples to be able to rest. If you look in Luke chapter 9, let's go to Luke chapter 9. We're going to look at the next account. I'm going to start in verse 10 and verse 11. In verse 10, it says, "And the apostles, when they had returned, told him all that they had done." We already mentioned that. "Then he took them and went aside privately in a deserted place belonging to the city called" what? You have a question? Are you? Rick, you okay back there? I thought you were waving at me. I'm sorry. They went to a deserted place belonging to the city called what? Bethsaida. Now, the reason this is interesting, the first two accounts, we know they go to a deserted place. And we're going to learn a little bit more, what does it mean by this deserted place? And obviously, we're going to find out there's nothing there. There's nothing, no place for them to lodge. There's no place for them to eat. But what's interesting is near a city that belongs, or near a town that's close to the town of Bethsaida. Does anybody know what the word Bethsaida actually means, what it comes from? Has anyone ever actually taken time to look that up and try to see, hey, is there significance about this time or this town, excuse me? Now, we call this a feeding of 5,000, right? What is going to be provided for the people to eat? Bread and what else? Fish. Did anybody know this name is the Fisher's Town? That's the name of this. And to me, that's a little bit ironic. But not only that, Philip, Andrew, and Peter, they're actually from that area. And so we actually see that also. And not only that, if you turn over to John chapter 6, verse 1, actually I'm going ahead of myself. In John chapter 6, verse 1, it tells us a little bit more about how they actually got there. We already told that they got in the boats. But it says, "After these things, Jesus went over the Sea of Galilee," which is the Sea of Tiberias. And of course, this gives us a little bit of better location because Bethsaida is actually northeast of where the Jordan River enters to the Sea of Galilee. So we get a little bit more explanation where they're at. So let's go ahead and turn back to where I lost my point at first. We talked about a deserted place. Oh, we're good. Let's go back to verse 13 of Matthew. Matthew chapter 14, verse 13. Anybody have any questions or comments? I know we haven't gotten deep into it yet. Any questions or comments or observations? All right, so in verse 13, the second half of it, they deserted by a place by himself, but it says, "But when the multitudes did what? They heard it. They followed him on foot from the cities." Now, when you think about this, these people came to follow Jesus. And of course, you might say, hey, why do they follow Jesus? Turn over real quick to the next passage. Let's look at Mark chapter 6. We're going to look at verse 33. But the multitudes saw them departing. They see the Jesus, the disciples, leaving. And many, key word says, knew him and ran there on foot from all the cities. They arrived before them and came together to him. I like looking at this passage right here because when you see this real quick, it says they knew him. When you think about that word knew, what do you think that actually means? That's right. When you think of the word new here, the word is epikinosko, which means they recognized him either by sight or by the stories that related to him. And hold your spot here because I want to come right back to it. But if you look real quick over to John chapter 6, verse 2, it's going to give us a little bit more reason, like he said, why they followed him. And we'll come back and look at Mark again. But in John chapter 6, verse 2, the great multitude followed him because they saw what? His signs. So they knew him because, hey, they seen signs. They seen miracles that he has done before. You know, that's a great explanation on that. And it says, which he performed on those who were what? Diseased. So, of course, these people probably had needs and wanted to go and see what he could have done for them. But go ahead and go back over to Mark where we just were. And Mark 6:33. It says, but the multitude saw them departing, and many knew him and ran there. How did they approach or come to see Jesus? On foot. What did they leave? Where did they leave from? They came from the where? The cities. You think about that today, coming from the comfort of your home, coming from the comfort of your place. These people knew things that Jesus had done. They recognized him. They heard stories of him. They seen miracles. They wanted to go see him. They didn't think about the things that they're leaving back at home. And we'll see this a little bit more. You know, they get out here, they follow Jesus. They go into the middle of nowhere. They don't have food to eat. But these individuals actually traveled by foot. Now you think about that today for us. Some of us sometimes complain, oh, it's too dark for us to travel. Oh, it's too far for me to go over there and worship the Lord here. Even though I have this nice, cool truck I can sit in or this car or this vehicle, these people are traveling on foot to see Jesus. Another thing that I like here in verse 33, when did they stop seeking after Jesus? Do what? Not till they arrived and came to him or before them. That's right. When you think about today, when we have people that are out there seeking Jesus or seeking the church and us too, when are we going to start looking? Start stop looking. Hopefully we already kind of stopped looking. We're just growing because we know we are part of the Lord's church. But you think about in the world today, oh, I'm a little bit tired. I'm a little bit weary. I got other things I need to do. And so I'm not going to worry about it. I'll pick that up and look at it for tomorrow. These individuals didn't stop until they approached him and actually they're actually there. And so that's one thing that I see there. Any questions or comments?
Just real quick, Randy.
Yes, sir.
You know, just a quick observation is they left the city, which means they left the village, and they were so eager to see Jesus that they were on foot, they ran, and they left provisions behind. Mm-hmm. Now, do we have that same kind of eagerness now that we would be willing to go and leave provisions to eat and things like that behind just to
thank you. And one of the things I looked up on that word run, because I was thinking about sprinting or something like that. And of course, you look up in the Greek, the word run there means to go with a whole a group, a crowd of people. And when you think about that today also, you know, a lot of times people run in a group or a crowd to do things that are wrong, not seeking out the thing that's actually positive. And we see a group of individuals that are running to do that same thing, leaving the comforts of their home, as you just said, being dedicated. I appreciate that. Any other comments or questions?
Were they good? It's just because they were like, hey,
okay. I'm glad you said that. And we might think that, and the reason we say that, because of course, someone said they saw the miracles that Jesus have done and the diseases that he's healed. And what we're going to see a little bit about Jesus' compassion, he's going to be healing some people. And of course, we know people want to see miracles. I mean, not now because they don't exist. We know people are going to want to see that. And sometimes you think, and I hate to say this, but sometimes you think we might want to... I'm trying to think of a good example. Who was the man? He's an archaeologist. Maybe I could help me out, Royce. He actually wanted to prove the Bible was incorrect by looking at the geography of it. And what he did was he thought that Acts and all the gospel accounts are incorrect on the paths that you take. And he said, this can't be right here. He was going to go and disprove it for the wrong reason. All right. Them going maybe to Jesus to get healed physically. Maybe we could say it's for the wrong reason, because we know today we want to be healed spiritually, which is for the right reason. But eventually what happened to this man, I can't remember his name. He found out 100%, guess what was right? The Bible. And he was wrong. And that led him to become a believer, which is a good thing. We're going to see about God's compassion in a little bit and what this is going to lead to. Well, that's a good comment, good question, good thing to ponder. Thank you. Anything else? Okay, let's go ahead and go back to our Matthew 14. Verse 14. In verse 14, it says that when Jesus went out, he saw a great multitude, and he was moved with compassion for them, and he healed their sick. What we see right here in verse 14, he has compassion, and this probably leads to him healing the sick. But when you think about the word compassion, that means to be moved. That said, your very bowels will continue to make people to urge you to do something out of, even sometimes to be moved to compassion out of pity, things of that nature. And it's from, they consider that the seat of love and pity. And we see that Jesus was moved to compassion. But we continue to look a little bit in a couple of other, in other passages to see why. First off, in this verse, obviously, if he's healing them, he saw that they had some diseases that needed to be healed, right? So let's go ahead and turn over to Mark chapter 6, verse 34. Mark 6, verse 34. It says, and Jesus, when he came out, he saw a great multitude, once again a crowd, and he was moved with compassion for them. I like this because right here it says, because for this reason, they were like what? They were like sheep not having a shepherd, so he began to teach them many things. Now, I don't know much about sheep, but basically what we all know, whoever else raised sheep can tell us that sheep are very, very dumb. They're very, very ignorant. They need someone to actually take care of them. Now, Jesus, look at this great multitude. He says these individuals are like sheep. They're wandering. They're lost. They don't know what to do. Now, what was the remedy that Jesus had here in order to help these people that were like sheep? What was his remedy? To teach them. Think about the world today. The lost sheep. What's the remedy for them also? Go around and find man's knowledge and figure out how to be happy and to live? No, to teach them the word. And we'll find in a couple of other passages, we'll see a little bit more in detail what specifically did Jesus actually teach about here. But what are some names that Jesus is referred to throughout the Bible? And actually, one of them should come to your mind exactly right now when we read this. He referred to them as being what?
Referred to the people or to Jesus?
Well, he referred to Jesus as a sheep. So Jesus must be the what?
Shepherd.
The good shepherd. Turn over to Psalm 23, verse 1. Psalm 23, verse 1. Y'all should be familiar with this. We won't read the whole thing, but we come back to it. But here it says, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Now, when you think about this written here, I like the part where it says, I shall not want. I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. When it says, I shall not want, that means I'm not going to be lacking in anything. I'm going to have everything I need. Now, I'm getting ahead of myself, but you think about these people. These people are seeking after Christ. Matthew 6, verse 33. All right. They're actually leaving the things at home behind. You might have worries, hey, I'm starting to get home. Where are we going to have to eat? I didn't bring anything. What are we going to do? But of course, who's going to take care of us if we do seek the kingdom first? Jesus. And right here, you're not going to be lacking. You're not going to be needing something else and want. So we have that there. And one thing I'll come back to, look at verse 2. He makes me lie down in green pastures. And we're going to come back to that just a little bit. You can hold that psalm for a while, but we'll go back to where we're reading. Let's look real quick at Luke chapter 9, 19, verse 10. Luke 19:10. Actually, I meant Luke 9:10. I'm sorry.
9:10?
Yes. Actually, no, 19:10. I apologize. Will somebody read Luke chapter 19, verse 10 for us real quick? I'm sorry. Luke 19:10. Now, Jesus said these people look like they're what?
19:10.
They look like they're lost, right? Now, what was one of Jesus' responsibilities
for coming here to earth?
Luke 19:10. Would somebody read that out clearly?
For the Son of Man has come to seek and save that which was lost.
What do you think Jesus is doing right here? And how is he saving them at this moment? Not only he's saving them physically by healing them, but also, most importantly, spiritually by teaching them. Like I said before, how do we know exactly what Jesus was actually teaching? And we can go back and we can look in just a second. Let's go ahead. In Mark chapter 6, verse 34, it said that he began to teach them many things. We already read that. That's the remedy. But let's look at Luke 9:11. I apologize, I was trying to go to just a second. In Luke 9:11, it says, but when the multitudes knew it, they followed him and he received them and spoke to them about what?
The kingdom of God.
And he healed those who had need of healing. And I like that. He healed those who had what of healing? Need of healing. Now you think about people who are outside of Christ. You think about those who are spiritually lost. What do they have need of?
Jesus.
Need of healing. Where are they going to find that once again? What do we need to be a part of? What do you think the kingdom of God refers to here? You already know the answer. The church. The church. That's the only way you're going to be able to be right with God, is to figure out how to become part of the church. The church that Jesus bled and died for. And Jesus was here to seek and to save the lost. And we actually see that there. He healed them who had need of healing. But one thing I also like about Jesus' compassion, in the verse 11, it says they followed him. And what do you think his compassion led them to do? He did what to them? Well, our healed was right, it's still a little bit earlier than that. He received them. Now let's think about us. How can we demonstrate, or how can we show compassion on others? What does that actually look like today? Everybody's quiet.
Well, I think of yesterday when we had guests. And the family was here. We had several people that were coming from a week of camp. But instead of not participating because they were tired or they'd been busy and they needed that rest, they came and they served and they did what they could to come.
Now you think about what you just said. I appreciate that. Right before that, we said Jesus took him and his disciples to do what?
To rest.
To rest. Did they continue to say, hey, get away from us, let's continue to rest? No, it led him to have compassion. It led to him to receiving them. There are times in life, hey, we do get tired, we do get weary, we don't feel like we want to get up and answer that door or help someone out in need. But here's the compassion. The key thing is help someone who was actually in need, just like yesterday. Thank you for that. Any other comments or concerns or points?
Compassion for others also includes, you know, like what Jesus was doing was spiritually offering help to them as well as physically. Even today it's the same. You can teach someone the gospel, you can share God's word with them, you can share the church with them, but then as a result they still have physical needs that sometimes we need to step up and help and take care of, especially coming out of the world. And that takes time. It takes time, it takes energy, it takes effort. So in this process of feeding as well as spiritually, I think today that still holds for the compassion we ought to have with those in the world as well.
Okay. I don't want to get off on a tangent, but
thank you for the comment.
But some people might think it's compassionate to just let them be. I know you want to live this way. I know you want to live in sin. I know you want to be a homosexual. I don't want to hurt your feelings, so I'm going to have compassion on you and let you be. The day of judgment comes, they stand before the Father, they go to hell. Did you show them compassion? I'm just asking. Sometimes showing compassion can be a hard thing. The key thing here, it actually says he healed those who had needed it. When we talk about spiritually struggling in the world, sometimes we have to say things that they might not want to hear. and we truly love them and want to have compassion on them and seek their best interests, as we're seeing this here, and help them out, we're going to make that made known. But today in the world, I see
a lot of people say, hey, we can't hurt their feelings, we can't do this, so let's just kind of
let that go. That's not right. Somebody said something over here? Thank you. All right, any other questions or comments?
Well, there's a really large thing about we don't allow ourselves to be compassionate. You know, you have situations arise where if you just sat down and talked to somebody for a minute, you could probably be a reinforcement or something like that. But we have our own closed little world. You know, we tend to run away from situations.
Thank you. And the biggest, well, one of the points I wanted is to make sure when we talk about these people or individuals that were lost, Jesus said they're like sheep. And of course, we know Jesus is a great shepherd. In order to fix that, the remedy of that was actually teaching. And not only that, when we look at the next passage, it wasn't just teaching anything. He taught them about the kingdom of God. He taught them about the church. So that's what I want to look at right there. Turn back over to Matthew. We're going to look at chapter 14 again. Excuse me, chapter 15. And we're going to look at verse 15. Excuse me, 14:15. I did that again. 14:15. So we're going to talk about Jesus having compassion. This we're going to see a little bit more of Jesus in his compassion. In verse 15 it says, when it was evening, his disciples came to him, saying, this is a deserted place. You remember, we're in the middle of nowhere. We left the cities. There's no food to eat. There's no place for them to lodge. And the hour is already late. Send the multitudes away that they may go into the village and buy themselves some food. But in verse 16, Jesus said to them, they have no need, or they do not need to go away. You give them something to eat. And so right here, we're going to see a little bit. Jesus is about to teach a lesson to his disciples. But not only he's going to teach him a lesson to disciples, he's also going to supply a need to the individuals that are actually there. Turn over to Mark once again. Mark chapter 6. Let's look at verse 35 and 36. When the day has now far spent, his disciples came to him and said, this is a deserted place once again, and already the hour is late. Verse 36, send them away, that they may go into the surrounding country and village, and buy themselves, and I like this, buy themselves, you know, let them take care of themselves. Let them get their own food. Buy themselves some bread, for they have nothing to eat. And verse 37, but he answered and said to them, you give them something to eat. And of course, they said to him, shall we go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread and give them something to eat? So first, what I see here is the disciples said, hey, let them go and take care of themselves. Let them get what they need to do. Jesus is like, no, you can take care of them. Let's take care of it. So right here, the disciples says, well, should we maybe go and get this much food? Now, turn over to Luke. Turn over to Luke. Chapter 9, we're going to look at verse 12. In verse 12 it says, when the day began to wear away, the 12 came and said to him, send the multitudes away, that they may go into the surrounding towns and country, and lodge and get provisions, for we are in a deserted place here. But he said to them, you give them something to eat. And they said to him, we have no more than 5 loaves and 2 fish unless we go and buy food for all the people. So at one point, we're going to find the next passage in John that Jesus asked them to go around to figure out what they could find. They find 5 loaves and 2 fish. And obviously, what did they say? That's not enough. And of course, 5 loaves and 2 fish is not enough. 2 fish is not enough for just me right now. But of course, a little bit earlier, it talks about should we go and get 200 denarii worth of food. Turn over to John real quick. John chapter 6. Verse 5, then Jesus lifted up his eyes, and seeing a great multitude coming towards him, he said to Philip, where shall we buy bread that these may eat? But this he said to do what? To test him, for he himself already knew what he was going to do. Jesus already knew this is going to be an opportunity for him to teach his disciples a lesson, and hopefully to actually also teach the lesson of the crowds. In verse 7, Philip answered him, and he said, 200 denarii worth of bread. Earlier they said, let's use this much. But right here in this verse it says, is that enough for them? Is it sufficient? What does it say? He says it wasn't sufficient. It's not enough. And so one of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, there is a lad here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 small fish, but what are they among you? So right here, what I see is here the disciples, they're limiting Jesus and his ability right now. Hey, we can go and get this bread. We can actually get this fish here, but that's not enough. It's not going to satisfy these people. So what should we do? Jesus already knew what he's going to do. And what's very interesting to me, they do find the bread and the loaves from a lad, a young boy. Now, I try to put myself in those shoes. Think about if you're selfish and you see the crowd, everybody's getting hungry. Would you want to maybe eat your food really, really fast before anyone else sees that you have it to take care of yourself so you can be satisfied? And of course, we know God tells us to be like little children. Some children have a hard time sharing, but some children, I know my girls, they're completely the opposite. They'd rather give it to you before they actually take it. They're like their mom, which is a great thing. When you think about this lad being unselfish. This lad being unselfish led to a whole bunch of people being blessed. Think about that today. Can we be selfish where others do not have an opportunity to be blessed? Can we be selfish with our money, our funds, the things that we have? Me, 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 I need this. I'll worry about them later. Or is it okay sometimes, hey, I can live without this for a second. Here, you take this. You need it more than me. And we have a good example of this lad. Because of his unselfishness, the whole crowd was blessed. Not only are we going to see the whole crowd was blessed, they're able to eat more than they could eat. They have leftovers. But also we're going to see at the very end, more people actually even believe in Jesus after this. And that's a great thing. And we can do that also. Now, one thing I wanted to think about was something on the extreme opposite end. Do y'all remember Achan and his sin? Who can tell me about Achan and his sin? Does anybody remember Achan? That's right. When the children of Israel were coming into the promised land, they were told not to take any spoils. Achan saw this beautiful garment. He saw some gold. He had to have it. He went and he hid it in his tent. They go to battle and they're told, hey, this should be an easy war. So let's not take all our men. So they took, I forget what the exact number was. They took a few fewer men than they needed. And of course, they knew God was on their side, or so they thought so. They go to battle. They start to lose. They end up having to retreat. They ask the question, God, what's happening? Why are you doing this to us? They're told there's sin in the camp. And we know because Achan actually took of the spoils when he should not have had. When he took of something being selfish, did he actually bless the rest of the people around him? Did he actually bless his family? They lost their lives. Did he bless the men that actually went to war and lost their lives? No. And I only think about that, the people that died there, think about the families that are left that lost their loved ones. Were they blessed because of this selfishness here? Let's not be like that. Let's be more like this lad who was willing to help out others and not just keep it for himself. Any questions or comments? Y'all are pretty quiet. Yes.
There were at least 2 fish and 5 loaves that took enough for one.
That's right. Unless you have Jesus with you, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to see that in just a little bit. You're right. I was saying, why wouldn't that boy keep it to himself? You know, that would have been my selfish, wrong opinion to do, you know. Yes, ma'am.
So many times, though, just like the apostles, we look at the physical side and don't think about the spiritual side. That, you know, maybe we don't have enough physically.
Okay.
But when we share that, we not only share the blessing of physical, we share the blessing of
spiritual.
And a lot of times we don't share because we don't think about that spiritual side.
That's right. Thank you so much. Any other questions or comments? All right, let's go ahead and turn back over to Matthew real quick. Let's look at Matthew. Let's look at chapter 14, verse 16. Actually, let's say 17. And they said to him, "We have here only 5 loaves and 2 fish." He said, "Bring them here to me." Then he commanded the multitudes to sit down on the grass. And he took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, looking up to heaven. He blessed and broke and gave the loaves to the disciples. And the disciples gave the multitudes to them. So first off, Jesus says, "Hey, bring me what you have." In verse 19, I like the word that's used there. Then he commanded the multitudes to do what? To sit down. Right here, we don't see exactly if they sat down or not, but he commands them to do something, does he not? And what I like here, he also commands them to sit where? On the what? On the grass. Turn over to Mark. Mark chapter 6. Let's look at verse 39. Then he commanded them to make them all once again sit down in groups of what type of grass?
Green.
I actually like this. You know, first it's just some grass. You ever sit on some brown, dry grass? Feels nice and soft, doesn't it? Sticky in the legs and stuff. But right here we know it's some green grass. So it's probably a plus. Do what?
You don't get chicken.
Okay, there you go. You don't get chicken. So we have some green grass right here. So in verse 40, what I like here, not only that he commanded them to do this, to sit down, it says, so they sat down in ranks in hundreds and in fifties. Now Jesus is telling them something to do. What are these individuals doing? I'm not going to sit on that grass and get triggers. No, I'm not going to sit there. I'm just going to stand here. I'm all right. You know, and this is a different thing, and I hate this. This is going off the deal. As a teacher, what I hate sometimes, you have that one individual, maybe two individuals that is not going to do what's supposed to be done. They don't want to follow the rest of the crowd. I don't mean that in a bad way. You give instructions to the class, but you have that one person that has to be hard-headed and try to do it his way. And the reason I see that as being incorrect, if that teacher's in authority and it's something that's not sinful, why aren't you doing it? And that's just a different thing here. But right here we have Jesus who has all authority. He's telling these individuals to go ahead and sit down in this grass in groups of 50. It says that the people did it. Go ahead and turn over to Luke. Luke chapter 9. Let's start in verse 14. For there were about 5,000 men. Then he said to his disciples, "Make them sit down in groups of 50. And they did so, and they made them all sit. Then he took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish. I don't want to get to that yet. I'll come back to that. Excuse me. So right there, look at John chapter 6, verse 5. I'll go back in a second. Then Jesus, I don't want to go there yet, but we'll start there in a second. But right here we have Jesus is commanding some things. And of course, these people are setting themselves up in a way where they can have an option, not an option, where they can actually be blessed. They're being obedient to what God has actually said. God or Jesus is about to bless these individuals by multiplying the food. And so they can all be satisfied. And it says, I ask you to turn to John. Let's go ahead and read there first. Let's look at verse 5, John 6, verse 5. Then Jesus lifted up his eyes and seeing a great multitude coming towards him, he said to Philip, "Where shall we buy bread?" Let's keep on going down. Okay, let's start in verse 10. Excuse me. Now Jesus said, "Make the people sit down." There was much grass in this place, so the men sat down and the number about 5,000. Now before I go on with that, I kept on referring to the grass. What do you think the grass maybe makes me think of? Think about a passage that we read already earlier. He makes me lie down where?
Psalms.
He makes me lie down in green pastures. Now you think about lying down in green pastures, isn't that where you can be comfortable? Does God want us, or does Jesus want us to be comfortable, to have comfortable lives? Do you think that sometimes? He wants these individuals to be comfortable where they're going to be right here.
There's a place that says, "Man,
don't say women, it's men.
That's right. 5,000 men, and if we saw earlier, and also at the very end of John, you'll find out that there's also women and children. Don't know exactly how many that's there. That is correct. And so in verse 11, it says, when Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed them to the disciples, and the disciples to those sitting down, and likewise to the other fish, as much as they wanted. So who actually distributed the food? Disciples. So what do you think, what type of lesson is Jesus teaching the disciples right now? Service. Servitude. Acts of service. You're about to see these people to be blessed, but hey, you're not just going to sit and watch from the sidelines, sit in the pew and see what everyone else is going to do. I want you in there also. I want you working. He's actually going to have them actually sit there. I want you to remember the word here. In verse 11, it says that Jesus gave what? Thanks, right? Keep that in mind. Turn back over to Matthew chapter 14. Let's look at verse 19. Then he commanded the multitudes to sit on the grass, and he took the five loaves, look up to heaven, and he did what this time? He blessed and broke and gave the loaves to the disciples, and the disciples gave it to the multitudes. Once again, you see them actually serving. Look at Luke real quick. Luke chapter 9, verse 16. Then he took the five loaves and the two fish, and looking up to heaven, he did what this time? What's the word that's there? He blessed. Matthew, Mark, and Luke uses the word blessed. John uses the word thanked. Do you think there's a difference between those meanings? All right, would you look it up? In the Greek, in those first three passages, when he uses the word blessed, is eulogio, which means to praise, to invoke a blessing, to consecrate a thing, to set it apart, to ask God to bless it. And so, you know, when we sit down to pray for our food, do we actually do that? Yes, we do. But there's a different word when we get over to thanks. This is not invoking a blessing. When you get to the word in John, it's called Eucharistio. I know I'm sorry saying it wrong, but it's E-U-C-H-A-R-I-S-T-E-O. And it means to be grateful. It means to feel thankful, to give thanks. And it's heartfelt. It's not rote. It's not mundane. When you pray for the food that's set before you, how thankful are you for it? Now, just imagine this. There's two reasons that I think. Well, I won't say a thing. There's two things. Jesus is actually thanking God for this food that's being multiplied in order to feed the 5,000 that's here. But also, when we look at John just a little bit, when we find out more people are going to believe, do you not think that he's also thanking God for what's about to happen? What this food, or this miracle, I should say, is going to do for the kingdom? Y'all are giving me blank stares. Are y'all still with me, or putting y'all to sleep yet? Putting you asleep, you're shaking your head, yes. I don't know if you're saying you're with me or you're asleep. Which one? Okay. Well, what we see here, we have two things. He's praising God to bless it, to consecrate it, to set it apart. But he's also thanking God for what he has given him and the opportunity he has right here. And we'll see how that's going to play out in just a little bit. But what's interesting, when we read through these passages real quick, when we go back to Matthew chapter 14, verse 20, and I believe Evelyn mentioned this at the very beginning. Verse 20, it says, so they all ate and were filled, and they took up 12 baskets full of fragments that remained. So it wasn't like, hey, you get two pieces, you get two pieces, you get three pieces, you want to come back for seconds, you can. They could have came back for seconds, but it says that these people were filled. They had to be satisfied with that. Go ahead and turn over to Mark 6, verse 42 and 43. It says, so they all ate, and once again they were filled, and again they took up the 12 baskets full of fragments and of fish, Now, those who had eaten the loaves were about 5,000 men, all right? And I'm almost out of time, so I'll go a little bit faster. But right here, we see that they had more than enough. If you think about in Psalm 23, you think about my cup overfloweth. At the very beginning, David says, I'm not lacking anything. These people weren't lacking. They had more than what they needed. Jesus can do the same thing for us. But a couple of things that you saw in that passage, they were taught about the kingdom. Jesus commanded them to do some things. These people didn't say, hey, I can just believe you, Jesus, but I don't have to do what you said. They were obedient. And of course, they were blessed. They were blessed. Now turn over real quick to John chapter 6, verse 14 and 15. And I'm going to stop because I'm almost out of time. John chapter 6, verse 14 and 15. It reads, then those men, when they had seen the signs, the miracle we just talked about, Jesus did, they said, this is truly the prophet who is to come into the world. They did not say here, this is truly a prophet. This is truly some prophet. It says, this is truly what type of prophet? What? Should they have been looking for the prophet? Somebody go ahead and turn back to Deuteronomy chapter 18. Verse 15, read that for us. Deuteronomy chapter 18, verse 15. Loud and clear.
The Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from your midst, from your brethren, him you shall hear.
Obviously, who's talking in that passage? Royce, who's talking? Well, in that passage right there in Deuteronomy 18, who's talking? Moses. Moses. But referring to, as you just said, referring to Christ. So this is what we talked about earlier all this week. What are the purposes of miracles? To confirm the word, confirm Jesus Christ was who he was. This miracle right here confirmed it. More people said, hey, this is the prophet, not a prophet, not some prophet. This is the Christ. And that's all I have. Anyone else have a question or a comment? All right. Thank you for your attention.